All right, we are back and starting. We are here today with Noah and Gravy from the Paranormal Investigators of Milwaukee. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Great.
That's good to hear. And I hope you all are staying safe and staying comfy.
Best of our ability.
So, how long have you guys been in the paranormal field?
You want me to go first, Gravy?
Yeah, you've been doing it longer, so naturally the oldest goes first, right?
That's right. More experienced. So I've been doing this since 2005 in any sort of, actual structured fashion, if you will. You know, things happened before that, but 2005 is when I really started. I actually joined a group and started to try and do this and learn about it as best as I could. So you can do the math on that.
Oh, that's 15 years.
Yep. For me, it's been 10 years. I met Noah at a library event, and it was love at first sight. And he's been trying to get rid of me ever since, and he just can't do it. He can't shake me.
I was trying to get to see if Gravy couldn't be available for this podcast. I was calling his wife, his kids. Like, is sure there's something he can do?
Everybody else, right?
It's got to be gutters to be cleaned or something, right?
So what got you guys interested in the paranormal that got you into this?
For me, I just loved Halloween when I was growing up as a kid. And it was impossible.
That's
for
a good reason, actually.
That was really that was my interest. And I grew up pre-internet initially. You know, I didn't have internet in my house until I was in high school. So, you know, the only way that you could really be able to have anything spooky happening was visiting your library, or when Halloween came around, stuff that would come on TV. That was it. So I was just really interested in that. And then when I started hearing stories at different places, from my hometown to where I went to college, I was just kind of naturally interested in being able to, you know, investigate those. But not, I wasn't like, I'm gonna go investigate that. I was like, oh, that's interesting, I want to learn more about it, sort of thing. And then that's just kind of where it came from there. And I was in Milwaukee for graduate school, and I saw a promo for Ghost Hunters on Sci-Fi. And that was the first time I ever realized that people actually went and did that in any sort of organized fashion. So I was like, well, if two plumbers can do it, why can't I? And so that's why I started looking into it more.
Cool. Gravy, how about you, man?
Yeah, so for me, it goes back to my childhood of watching Unsolved Mysteries. Loved that show as a kid.
That was a good show.
Yeah, and I was fascinated with the ghost stories. Not so much the kidnappings, those ones scared me, those mysteries, but the ghost stories definitely were interesting to me. And so, 25, 30 years later, when I saw Ghost Hunters, I was the same way. I was like, holy crap, people do this. And then I found Pim working out of doing a library event in Brown Deer, Wisconsin, and went and saw them. And again, that's where I first met Noah and wanted to do that.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I've been kind of interested in the paranormal since I was a kid. My mom always told me stories about how she'd see her dead sister walking up the driveway coming home from school. So it's like, okay, that's just kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But, I kind of dragged Joe into this. He's, ever since his little thing, he's been kind of interested in it too. So,
well, I was interested. I was one that, you know, as I got older, Halloween got more fun for me.
Oh God, Halloween is fun as hell.
You know, you go from, you know, the stage where you forget about trick or treating and start trying to scare a hell out of all the trick or treaters by building a haunted house. You know. We took over my brother's house every year for quite a few years and built one in Madison and got quite popular for doing it.
Yep. We actually, for the east side of Madison, where his brother's house was, he had a big garage. We became kind of famous for our haunted house. We'd actually have people in April asking us if we were going to be doing a haunted house.
Put it up, put it up and take it down all in one day.
Wow.
That's a lot of work.
that way nobody, but nobody sees the secrets and can figure it out. And you know, when you add to it every year, then nobody knows what's going on.
Yeah, then we built our own props too. So
nice
strategy. Yeah.
So, what kind of equipment do you guys usually use when you go out and do investigations?
Well, Gravy's favorite is the K2 meter. He has quite the collection.
Well, wait. All right, now I got to tell you this. All right, besides we met you last year, all right, at the Wisconsin, because you were guests of Off the Rails. And then I watched your paraconference live investigation this past weekend. But I was also on your website, okay, which can be found scrolling down here. I recommend checking it out. It is kind of cool. But I was watching one of your videos about equipment that you guys don't believe in, and you know, and that K2 meter was on that list, wasn't it? Isn't that like a no-no for you guys, Gravy?
It is. Yes.
I'm sorry. I just had to give him a little shit there.
Yeah, Noah likes to give me a lot of shit, so he'll say anything that isn't Pim's favorite is my favorite. So I am not a fan of the K2 meter, as Noah will point out why.
Yeah, so we do have a video on our YouTube channel of useless
thermal equipment.
That really is stuff that's more used for like entertainment purposes. Like it encourages interaction from those investigating. So I could see why people would like to use them, because it probably makes it a lot more entertaining during an investigation. But when you're trying to actually gather information, useful information, and try to find out what's going on at a location, then it's just extra noise, and it doesn't provide you any hard data at the end of the day. You know, it's very up to, you know, things like ghost boxes and obeliscs and pucks and all those sorts of things, which cost hundreds and hundreds of dollars. At the end of the day, it might've been a fun investigation, but what did you get from it? Like, did you push the field forward at all from that interaction? And so that's why we don't like utilizing those sorts of things. We focus more on as close to hard data as we can get. So we use a lot of audio and video that we use, because I would rather capture it on audio or video than have me hear it and have to recount the information to you and you have to believe me, as opposed to me just playing something for you or showing something to you. And then we also use a lot of data logging equipment. So that's stuff that basically constantly monitoring the environment. So as many different variables that we can control or monitor at one time is what we're looking for. So we have data loggers that will data log A, B, alpha, beta, gamma radiation, stuff that does electromagnetic fields in different frequency ranges, stuff that does humidity, barometric pressure, air and surface temperature. We are looking into a quite expensive data logger that's built by a team that we got to know at one of our expeditions that we were just on this last summer, that actually has many more different data logging features in it. So for us, it's really about being able to investigate freely without having to be like, oh, I have to get my meters out and stuff like that, to be able to ensure that we're going to be focusing on the event that occurred, if anything did, and then capturing that data and being able to review it later.
And at the end of the day, I mean, we're not investigating for our own entertainment. We're actually there to try to capture evidence and find something that would back that evidence, be it through one of the conditions that we can data log for. So having that equipment that's useless just doesn't do us any good, because we're not there for our own entertainment.
Right, you're there more for the scientific portion of it, and trying to prove if there is anything there.
Right.
See, I've heard about the spirit boxes. I don't like them. Haven't really used one, but I don't like them.
Well, and it's the reason too easy I don't, to catch up radio signals.
Exactly. That's the reason I don't like them, because it scans the radio frequencies, and you don't know what you're catching at that point.
Mm-hmm.
The obelisk, I understand that little device, and it's supposedly a dictionary that a digital dictionary that can be used by the energy of the spirit. Okay, I get it, but again, What are you catching there? What are you actually hearing? What is actually coming through? So, you know, the different things, different electrical devices can be, the experience I've had with different electrical devices is they can be manipulated in different ways. Like EMF, you know, electromagnetic fields can actually cause things to go off. I've seen that happen. So,
yeah, that happens all the time. Yeah. REM pod is another one which people use often.
The REM pod, yeah.
Yeah, and it's really easy to have that go off from something else that's in the environment. And obviously you can't see EMF fields. And so when it goes off, you're like, okay, well, what could it be? And then you're trying to shut things off to see if that makes it stop going off or not, and try to figure out if, you know, what is actually manipulating it, because it's not like it's manipulating it in some sort of intelligent way. It's just going off for some reason.
Right. Yeah. Some of them are more sensitive than others.
Oh yeah. Like the K2 meter.
Yeah, exactly.
Gravy's favorite. He's probably got three right there in front of him. Gravy, go ahead, show him. It's all right.
I don't even have anything that looks like a K2 meter in front of me right now.
So what kind of cameras do you guys use?
We have Sony X160s that are converted over to full spectrum. That's the majority of the cameras we have. We do have some 4K Sony cameras as well. Most of them record to internal hard card or SD cards for easy removal.
Most of them do nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. I've burned through a couple of cameras that had the internal hard drive recording devices, and they go to crap every once in a while. So
some of them actually have internal hard drives, really?
Yep. Oh. Yep.
Yeah, when I first started
like that.
When I was first starting out, I hated the fact that you had to change tapes.
Yeah, the little mini cassette tapes.
There was the mini DVDs, and then those were really prevalent when I started out. And then it was the mini DVDs that were also, right. I just didn't like it. You had to continually buy media. And so the hard drive cameras came out not too long after that had the night shot on them from Sony. And so I invested early on in one. And then I learned that you could actually open the camera up and swap the hard drive out to get a bigger hard drive. Because that was usually the thing that cost the most was the physical hard drive that was coming in the camera. All the other things in the camera, for the most part, were the same. So I figured out how to do that. And so I went on eBay and figured out which models of the hard drives I needed to get. I would get them, swap them out, you know, and go from a 30 gig hard drive to an 80 gig hard drive.
Sounds like something we'd do.
Well, it was such a time saver and a money saver, and you could record the whole night, you know, and not worry about it.
I should have bought stock in Sony about 10 years ago.
Yeah, we all would have been rich.
All of us would have been rich if we hadn't done that. So, we use, they're not Sony, but we got a couple of cameras that use the night, shooting the night vision. And then also we use thermal cameras. Do you ever use those?
Yep, they've got those too. I've looked at their equipment list.
Your,
I did my research on them.
Your thermal cameras are probably a hell of a lot better than ours, though. Ours only takes stills.
Well, actually, that's all we have now. I used to have a thermal imaging camera that took video, and we did use it on investigations from time to time. But it's like a $5,000 piece of
equipment. Yeah, I was just going to say, I couldn't find one that was reasonable.
And so when I was looking at how much other equipment I could purchase for that same $5,000, I ended up selling it and then just getting some other regular cameras and other audio gear. So we use audio quite a bit. I mean, are you guys familiar with the use of our control recorders that we utilize on our investigations?
I haven't seen anything.
I don't think I got that far. I got to the cameras and I was kind of like looking at each one of those, like trying to see where I could find one.
So we, when we were doing investigations, I was probably 4 years, maybe 5 years in to PIM. And we were finding, we were capturing. So we started using what we call, what is called Zoom H1 audio recorders. That was our like audio recorder of choice. It was nice, small, compact, very light. It cost between $70 and $80 per recorder. And it recorded to an SD card. You could record for 30 hours straight at a really high quality, and they used WAV format, so an uncompressed audio file format, which was really important to us.
Which is like almost like raw data.
As close as the original
you can get. Yeah,
basically. Right. And so we were using those for a while. So we were capturing weird things on them, and we would be like, "Oh, that wasn't us. You know, we're pretty sure it's not us, or we don't think it's anything from outside." And there was always this kind of question. And so what I suggested is that, well, let's all wear a control recorder on our person. And so what we started doing is we wear photographer's vests just so we have lots of pockets to put batteries in and stuff like that.
Yeah, I saw that.
And so we all had pockets that we could just put a recorder in and just have the recorder, you know, sticking out. And then we call those our control recorders, our own audio control for each person. And I made it a required piece of equipment to be a member of PIM, or at least to be on an investigation. You had to have that piece of gear. And it's the first thing that we start before we start an investigation, and it's the last thing that we stop. And you leave the thing running no matter what, even if you're in the bathroom. It doesn't matter. Because sometimes you make some weird noises in the bathroom.
It's not pleasant. It is not pleasant at all having to re-listen to that memory.
You make better food choices on investigations is what it does. It makes you make better food choices. So
I don't think that would happen for me.
So we started using those, and we were finding that there were things that we probably would have put forth as evidence if we didn't have those control recorders to go back and listen to, because sound echoes very strangely, you know, in a building. And we have stationary recorders out, obviously, as well. And, you know, we could be on a break or, you know, doing something in the basement, and there's something up on the third floor, and we catch a weird noise. And my gosh, it's like somebody's right in the room. Well, it was just us in the basement, and it echoed up through the HVAC system, and it was caught on that record. It sounded completely different. And really, it was, you know, gravy sneezing in the basement and echoing up, and sounded like an old guy going like, "Ugh."
You sure it was just a sneeze?
We matched up.
You sure you didn't have tacos or burritos that week,
right? Well, what else happened when he sneezed, we're not going to talk about.
I am not that loud. Come on. And that actually did happen at Farr Elementary, but that was Tony that sneezed, not myself. So just to be clear. But yeah, that did happen. He sneezed while we were on a break, and it traveled all the way up to the third floor. And by the time it got to that recorder, it sounded completely different.
Yep. Didn't even sound like a sneeze, did it?
Nope. And then we were able to cross-reference it and say, oh, Tony sneezed at that moment. So,
that's always good to be able to do stuff like that.
Right. Right.
It is smart thinking to have controlled devices like that too. Tom here, you guys know Mr. Klein.
Yes, we do.
He's asking how much time does it take going through a single investigation?
Well, he's been on an investigation with me, so he should know.
You mean like evidence?
He may know, but the actually people doing that the investigation watch may not know.
Yeah, so it depends on the location and how long we're there for. Usually we're at a location for one night, and it could take anywhere between 6 to 10 hours. And then depending on how much equipment you put out, if you put out 5 recorders, you know, audio recorders and 2 video cameras, that's, you know, 70 hours worth of review time that we got to find in our own free time to do.
Yeah, and that's not easy to do.
It is not easy by any means.
I'm telling you, I'm still sitting on a lot of footage and evidence that I haven't published yet. All right. And it's all from one location, from one day that we just spent out there for one day.
We were out there for about 8 hours to 9 hours.
And we were out there for about 8 hours. Yeah, about 8 hours. And we weren't prepared to spend the night on this place because we didn't know that was going to be an opportunity. Yeah.
Didn't even know.
So we didn't have like a tent with us. All right. Cause we were out in a hay field out by Bray Road. And I'm sure you've all heard of the Beast of Bray Road.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So we were down there in a hay field, not too far from Bray Road. So talking to a guy that was in Linda Godfrey's book.
Okay. Her recent one. I know what I saw.
I don't think it was the recent one. It was okay. The one about Beast of Bray Road.
Oh, okay.
That's not up. None of the footage that we took from Lee's farm is up.
No. Yeah, none of that's up yet.
We were supposed to go back for an overnight with a guy from Illinois by the name of Dale Kazmarek.
Yeah, I know Dale.
And we were going to all meet up, but because Illinois put a travel ban because of the current conditions of COVID,
because Wisconsinites, that trip got put on hold. Themselves, they got to party all the damn time.
So that trip got put on hold.
I don't know.
So, yeah. And because of COVID, we haven't got out much. So this is what we've been doing by helping out other investigators promote themselves.
Well, we appreciate that.
Well, we try. Yep. Yeah, yeah. That's what we've been trying
so
to do. Is
besides you and Gravy,
most likely
there's looks like there's like four others on your team.
Right? Those are mostly cardboard cutouts. We just want to make sure you don't think it's just Gravy and I. You know, it's a little weird if it's just two guys that are coming into their house to do an investigation. So, oh, look, all the people we have. I'm just kidding. Yeah, we have a number of other investigators. We have Brandon. You know, he does a few things. I mean, he's not really useful, but he's learning. we have.
To be fair, Brandon's in charge of our website, and he has done a phenomenal job. So,
yeah, I like it. It's a really nice website.
Yeah,
he does the website. He also is the video editor for all our videos on YouTube, as well as the videos that are on the website as well. So he's somewhat useful, I guess. We should think about taking him off probation one of these days. And then we have Tom and Marilsa. This is the first couple that's ever been allowed in PIM. I had a pretty hard and fast rule against couples because of some bad experiences I had early on before I had formed PIM. And so I never allowed them in, but they made a compelling argument. They are actually based out of Madison, but they have come to more meetings than some of my local members when it comes to our monthly meetings. They are very coming. And they are, you know, Tom is an anesthesiologist, and he also has a PhD in microbiology. And Marilsa is actually a psychotherapist, licensed psychotherapist. She was a therapist for a school district for a number of years.
So some of these people got quite the background.
Yep.
Yeah, they got a good background.
Exactly. And then Amber is a new member who has joined just recently. She works in pharmaceuticals.
Was she with you just this past weekend on the live Huracan?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it was me, Gravy, Brandon, and Amber. And then right now our last member is John. He's a retired police officer. He takes care of all of our
that's always a good trait.
Right. Yeah, he's great. He does our interviews, all the contacts that we get for investigation requests, for membership requests, things like that. He does the kind of initial interviews of those and does a great job at wading through just an absolute ton of contacts that we get these days, from asking for investigations to presentations to, you know, was this picture? Can you look at this video? Everything under the sun. So he does a lot of yeoman's work behind the scenes for us. So
he's probably one of the most useful members in PIM right now.
Yeah. Digging out some of the useless garbage.
Yeah, I mean,
for you. We haven't been doing this as long as you guys, but I do have kind of a law enforcement background. Okay, I was a security officer and private investigator in the Madison area for a very long time. I go back as far as I was a security supervisor, and I worked the Central Storage Warehouse fire when it happened.
Oh.
About 25, 26 or 27 years ago when that happened. So I know what it's like. We get some, just even doing this for this short time, we've gotten a lot of things sent to us that I've had to like, that's fake. That's bullshit. That's, you know, mm-hmm. Yeah, this now, is going to fly.
You know, nowadays with the nanny cam, you know, having night vision cameras in your house becomes a simpler when with these different security systems and the nanny cams or whatever for watching babies, you know, like
doorbells.
Yep. You know, outside, inside. So everyone has a camera that can shoot in the dark now.
Oh, this can too.
Yep. And so
everybody's got one of those in their back pocket nowadays.
Well, they wake up to a notification from their Ring camera, or, you know, their baby's not sleeping well, And so then they're looking at the camera. They see something weird, and they get freaked out. Was that why my baby's not sleeping well? Or what was that weird thing in my backyard last night at 3 in the morning? And those things get sent to
you. Did you see that orb?
Well, they're mostly orbs. Almost all of them are orbs of some nature. But, yeah, so it just increases that load quite a bit that we have to be like, you know, have you looked at our website? We have a whole page on orbs. And it kind of goes
they do.
You know, what those could be. But we, you know, people generally are contacting us because they're concerned. And so John does a really good job of walking them through, like, this is what, you know, this most likely is, and this is how it happens. And, you know, these are things you can try to do to avoid them, or things to look for in the future if you catch them again, to see that they're the same thing that you already, you know, caught. It's nothing to be concerned about.
Yeah, people get a little spooked, mind plays tricks, and yeah. They get freaked out, and then they can't use their common sense to get back to some normalcy.
Yep.
And with all the cameras everywhere, it's enabling people to misidentify more things. Like last night, for example, I had a creature walking in my camera, and it had a big tail, so it looked like it was actually on two legs walking in the yard. Well, if I look back in the beginning of the camera, I could actually see a white stripe going down its back and realized it was a skunk, and the tail was just up in the air. So it looked like a small creature, but the night vision...
It was walking all paranoid.
Yeah. I didn't want to go outside after that when I knew it was a skunk anyways, but it just, you know, the quality of these cameras and the night vision on them aren't always the best for what, you know, what we're expecting to see, and it kind of distort what we are actually seeing.
Yeah. 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 Molly's asking if you guys are still been doing home investigations recently.
Does she need us to come out and investigate her new place?
We've already done that.
Oh.
No.
If you guys, actually, seriously, if you want to see the videos from it, you can find them on YouTube. You guys can check it out and see if there's anything
the picture that my wife caught on her cell phone when she was outside was pretty interesting too. They get this old shed in their backyard, and
maybe Molly's looking for a second opinion.
She might be. Tom's more freaked out than Molly is.
We were actually talking about going back over there and doing a follow up with them.
Yeah, we were supposed to do a lot of follow ups and a lot of things, but you know, this whole year has kind of been screwy, I think, for everybody. I mean, I'm sure it's put a damper on some of your investigations as well, considering the lockdowns that Wisconsin's had and some of the other states, because I've seen you guys have traveled outside of Wisconsin as well. And I'm sure since doing this since, what was it, say up here, you founded this in 2007. So, you know, that's like 13 years.
Yep.
You know, yeah.
I thought it was 2005.
2005 is when I started.
But he founded the Milwaukee Paranormal Investigators of Milwaukee in 2007. I'm reading it off the website.
Okay.
Yeah, I found it.
Well, that's fine. Read it off the website. God.
Yeah, I found a PIM. I started out in 2005 with another group that I joined that was just starting out, and then I moved on to PIM after about a year. So, but we haven't been doing home investigations. We continually are taking, you know, requests, and again, John does a lot of that work, talking to people and everything like that. And we've even had a few investigations that were almost tentatively set up, but ended up having to be canceled for one reason or another. Right now, I wouldn't endeavor to do things. I mean, Wisconsin, anyways, things are not looking great. And
I've seen that today.
To go and to other people's homes and have us come into their homes. I mean, it's a risk in both directions. So we would probably be staying away from doing that unless it was like a vacant building or something like that that didn't have people in it and that we wouldn't have to have contact with. The summertime is when we do our expeditions normally, and we were trying to figure out if we were going to still do it or not. We went back and forth and decided, you know, if things are looking okay and we take care, and we all got tested before we went, because you're in close contact in a vehicle for a long time when we do these expeditions. And we were good. Like we took precautions, you know, we wore masks. We didn't go into locations that we didn't have to go into. Even food, all food was to go, you know, so that we didn't have to worry about spending too much time in public locations, and we came out okay. So I think we did well in that respect, but, overall, we haven't done the last time we did a private investigation was in February, wasn't it, Gravy? Was that me and
you? Yeah, January, February, I believe.
Yeah.
I think that's about the time we did Tabby's house. Mm. Maybe March, just before this happened.
I think it was more like March.
And we did Tom and Molly's in February.
Or right at the beginning of this whole mess.
Yeah, we've only done two private home investigations, so. But the one was obviously Tom and Molly's new house.
Yeah. You can take that down though. You don't have to keep it up.
And then the other one was a cousin of mine. So they were both fairly safe, but it was also before this got out of control too. Because once this got out of control, he wouldn't let me out of he or my wife wouldn't let me go anywhere too far.
Well, no, because
I've got the compromised immune system.
Right, he's got a compromised immune system. My girlfriend has a compromised immune system. She was born without a thyroid, so she's got to watch what, you know, the contact she makes. And then, of course, here I am in an essential employee, and I've got to go to work every damn day. So not just that, I also deliver a dry ice all over the UW campus. I'm hitting the hospitals up there. I'm hitting the labs up there. I'm all over that campus all day, every day. So, you know, I've got to be careful. Because if I wind up catching it and bring it home to her, or get it over to him somehow or something, you know, at some point, it's like, it's done. Those two, I don't think, if it did happen to hit them, I don't think either one of those two would survive it.
I'm a vampire. I'm going to live forever. I told you that.
Well, you're a Twinkie, so shut up.
No, I'm a vampire.
I'm doing a study on Twinkies. They do not last as long as we'd like to think they would.
See, there you go.
I don't know. I'm sure the Family Guy and Simpsons would disagree because they did that crossover where they found the Twinkie factory.
I have one at my desk at work right now that's been in there for about 4 years, and it's as hard as a rock. So I
try to eat that and break a tooth.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I've actually thrown it at people.
Actually, I bet if you take and put a little bit of water on it and slap it in the microwave for 10 seconds,
it'll
soften right up.
It probably will.
Guys in the ER with a bruise on your head. How'd you get that? Somebody threw a Twinkie at me.
I've had to use it to get people's attention.
Well,
who throws a Twinkie?
Whatever works,
really?
Right?
Yeah. They got their headphones in and they got their back to me, so I just take the Twinkie, turn around, and I just throw it, hit him in the back.
Noah's got something running around his house.
That's
a pug. I see the little pug back there.
That's my dog.
Is that what that was?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a pug. So, in your investigations, have you guys caught anything that you might consider is of the paranormal variety?
We've caught stuff that we can't readily explain, sure. Mostly mostly EVPs. EVPs are great. I mean, they're probably 99.9% of the evidence that we do have anything of that we can't explain. But we do have an instance that Noah would be happy to tell you, because although I was there, he was standing right in front of the person when it happened. So he can account the story way better than I can.
The Gravy was focusing on trying to get some readings with his K2 meter at the time.
That is not true.
What's going on?
Oh, it was an obelus, right?
He was like, this thing is going crazy. What's happening? He's standing next to the electrical box, but Adam, what's happening going on here? So we were in Wilder, Kentucky at Bobby Mackey's Music World. First time there.
That place.
And we were getting a tour from the person who did the tours back then. And I was standing, it was like a T. So it was in the basement. I don't know if anyone's ever been there, but it's just past the window that supposedly where the well is supposedly is, that window in the basement. There's barrels that they keep there for beer bottles that come from the bar above. And the person giving the tour was talking about stuff that supposedly happened there and something about the bottles. And there's a female, one of our female investigators. She's not with the group anymore, not because of anything besides the fact that her family life got too busy for her to be in the group. She was standing, and all of a sudden she was laying on the ground. And I went over to her. I was standing, so she was basically like this, and I was like this to her. So I was kind of T to where she was at, and she went back this way is what happened. And I saw her, and I thought she tripped because the ground was a little bit uneven there. It's kind of a mishmash of dirt and kind of concrete left over from old foundations and whatever else is down there. And so I went over because I was concerned because there was broken glass on the ground, bottle glass from beer bottles not hitting the barrel or hitting it when it's full, whatever. So I went up to her and she had this shocked look on her face. And I was like, are you okay? Did you get cut? And she goes, no, I'm fine, but something pushed me. And I thought she was joking. I thought she just like lost her balance and she was trying to, you know, put it off as a joke. And I was like, oh yeah, sure, whatever. Yeah, you know, let me help you up. And she's like, no, seriously, Noah, it felt like something just took two hands and pushed right in the middle of my chest. And I was like, really? And so from there, we were being more careful about trying to have cameras facing this individual at all times and doing, you know, having more equipment kind of around her. And but much to our chagrin, all our best efforts were thwarted by one person who was with us on the investigation, who was not part of the team, but we were working with to kind of split the cost of the investigation at this time. And we were in what is called the Wall of Faces room almost exactly an hour later, which is also in the basement. And we were standing up around this area where supposedly kids' spirits are supposed to be. And we were trying to direct things to trigger objects we had on this table in the middle of the room. And she got pushed again. And this time I was standing right next to her when she was right to my left. And you had a camera set up in that room. And you can see her feet kind of flailing because she like is basically doing like a wall sit. She got pushed back to the wall, but it was far enough away where she couldn't just like, you know, lean forward and stand up again. She had fallen almost all the way down to the ground. And so she was like trying to kick her feet to be able to stand up again. And so, you know, I lifted her up and she said the same thing. It was just like something took two hands and pushed her right in the middle of her chest. Unfortunately, there was someone else with a handheld camera, which was kind of shooting in that area when it happened. And he was standing literally right in front of her. So our static camera could not see her when it occurred. But we do have what video we captured on the website. It's associated with that particular report. So that investigation was by far the most interesting that we've been on with someone having such physical manipulation of themselves. We've been back since several times and we tried to replicate to the best of our ability the things that were happening, you know, what we went ad nauseum through, you know, the order things occurred, who was carrying what when we went down to the basement, what things were said, what things weren't said, to try and figure out if there was any way that we could replicate the situation that we were in. Unfortunately, we, you know, didn't have anything like that happen again. And we've been there four times now, I believe.
Yep. Yep.
So, I mean, that's by far the most interesting event that occurred in any investigation that we've had.
And I'll tell you, the second time we were there, I was probably hovering the side of the walls a lot in case something tried to push me. And I think something did, but I think I was too heavy for it to even move me. So...
He thought it was gas.
Well, here's a question for you on that then. On the times that you went back, did you have another female member with you or was it all males?
It was just the one female member that came back the second, third time that we went. Originally, there was another female member who was there for that first initial time, but unfortunately, after that occurred, her mentality changed to the point that she was no longer an effective member of our group.
Ah.
And what's also interesting too to make note of is the investigator that did get pushed down. That was actually her second time at Bobby Mackey's. She had investigated there with another group prior to being there with us, and she had nothing like that happen then. So,
not interesting.
And she did go back with you a couple times then.
Yep.
Yeah, she went two more times. She was, you know, a testament to this individual. She really wasn't ever shaken that much by it. I mean, the first time it happened, she was, you know, shocked because she wasn't expecting, obviously, to be pushed by something she couldn't see. But, you know, she, you know, there's no tears. You know, she wasn't hysterical. She wasn't, like, you know, freaking out or anything like that. The second time it happened, the person who was with us, I think, actually made it worse than it actually needed to be. She, like, took her out and made her leave the basement completely. She ended up going back in, but I regret the fact that we had to leave the basement at that point. I think that if we could have stayed put and kind of tried to investigate in situ where we were, instead of kind of disrupting everything, it maybe would have yielded some information, but we'll never know.
Yeah. Well, the only reason I was asking those questions is because, from watching Ghost Hunters, I like Jason and Grant. They seem to be more authentic than any of the others that are out there on the syndications like that. But from watching them and understanding some of the stuff that they go through and do, the reason I was asking is it kind of seemed like she was targeted. You know, because she was the only one that was interacted with it on that mm-hmm. night.
She was also the lightest one in our group.
It's also true.
So basically, you could just blow at her and she'd fall over.
Essentially, yes, that's probably what happened.
So, do you do that often? Go back and try to recreate if something happens. So you guys try to debunk or try to explain?
Well, most definitely. I mean, the idea is to find out if there's a reason for it in the first place. Like, there's been times where we've gone back to a location where we thought we captured something. And we go back and go, oh, that's what's going on. We know that what we thought might have been evidence is definitely not evidence. It's something completely different.
Well, I was just wondering if we were, sometimes you don't hear people doing that.
Yeah,
we've done it. I mean, we've been back to like places like Sanatorium Hill 3 or 4 times, and some like Aslan Park a couple of times.
That's the only real way to get a good feel of the situation is to have repeat investigations, because then you get familiar with the location. You know what is a normal thing to happen and what is not a normal thing. What's a normal noise? What's a normal whatever? And being a place for one time, even if you're there for 6 to 8 hours, even 10, 12 hours, I mean, that's one day. You only experienced one weather condition that while you were there.
This is Wisconsin. Give it 5 minutes, it'll change.
Well, sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't. So, my first place I investigated a dozen times when I started PIM. I went back again and again and again. Part of it was because there wasn't great locations to go to. Part of it was because there was, activity that happened, and so it made it interesting. You know, we've been to a number of places a dozen times that we've investigated again and again and again, to try and build kind of a body of work there and have a good understanding of what is actually occurring there. And it really helps, it helps not only learn in general as an investigator, but it helps you be able to quickly parse through information when something does happen. That was just I've heard that noise 100 times. That's just this, or I know that sound. Or I know that light, because when the car drives up that hill, it shines off this picture and reflects on this wall. I know exactly what it is. But if you're there one time and you never go back again, who's to say?
Right.
We've been out to Eagle Road Cemetery a couple of times.
And the first time was really strange.
The first time was really strange because we're out there with the cameras. I think it was like right after we got the cameras, so we were kind of testing them out.
Yeah, we just got these night vision cameras.
And it was a low overcast day or evening. It was closer to midnight when we were out there, and it was kind of chilly, but there was an aircraft flew over. It was a jet that flew over, kind of like a passenger jet.
Real low flying.
It was really low flying. It just didn't make sense.
And keep in mind, this was like almost midnight. This was like between 11 and midnight.
Yeah, because the only airport that was in the area was barely big enough to land a Cessna in.
And it probably would have been closed at that hour. I mean, Dane County Airport, their last flight lands by before midnight usually, and they're shut down by midnight. And I know this because I drove cab in Madison for 3.5 years. You know, I hung out at the airport to make my money.
All right, Tom's got a question. It says, what type of evidence would it take for you to say that was a ghost?
The biggest problem is the definition of what a ghost is.
I knew that was coming.
That's the biggest issue. Lots of people ask that question. And it's always like, well, you tell me what you think a ghost is, and then I'll tell you what the evidence needs to be in order to say that it's a ghost. Because the definition of paranormal is, in my opinion, wide open. And there has been no definitive evidence of what a ghost or what the paranormal is in anything that I've seen. So we always say, you know, if something happens that we can't readily explain, that's exactly what we say. We don't exactly know what did this or what made this noise or what caused this thing to happen. You know, we looked at this, we looked at this, we looked at this, and all those things, it wasn't those things. So, you know, we're putting it out there, and if other people have ideas of what it might be, great. Because then we can hopefully go back to the location and see if those ideas are correct or not. Or maybe we can think, oh, no, it's, you know, it can't be those ideas because of these other things that we also know about the location or the piece of evidence or the equipment that we're using or whatever. I mean, for me, you know, to say something for sure, the thing that happened to our investigator, I find that as something that is that was paranormal because I don't know what did it. And I witnessed it myself. I know it wasn't faked. There was no strings involved. She hasn't taken pratfall classes for the last 6 months before she went on this investigation to really, you know, sell that fall that she had. It wasn't any of those things. But can I say that a ghost pushed her down? Well, I don't know because I don't know what a ghost is.
It's my daughter.
Oh.
Hi, Kayla.
We like physical. I like physical manipulation of objects best of all. Because if I have good control of the environment, I can at least make sure that it wasn't something that we did. There's other things we could check for, vibrations and instrumentation or trains or trucks or something like that driving by that could make something move. But that would be, for me, that's always the thing that I'm hoping to catch when I'm on an investigation. And in fact, when we were at Edinburgh Manor not too long ago, we actually had something happen. That was interesting that we caught on camera. In fact, I don't know if that's even up.
Probably not.
Is that on the website? Maybe.
Probably not.
The most recent Edinburgh investigation. I don't know if it's on there. There's a door that closed by itself. It's probably just because of a doorstop that suddenly lost friction. But it was awesome because it happened when no one else was anywhere near it. And
you're talking about this Edinburgh Manor?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like 4 of them up here on your website.
Reports, yeah. We've been there multiple times for the course of weekends.
Yeah, it looks like it's split up into part one and part two.
Yep, night one, night two. Yeah, but it was just cool because Noah contacts me out of the blue. He's like, you got to check your camera at this time. And I was like, what happened? He goes, I need you to see something to make sure. And sure enough, I'm going through the video right at that time because we timestamp all of our equipment so I could easily just find whatever he was talking about. And you see us go up the stairs to the second floor down the hallway about 25 to 30 minutes prior, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, this door just closes right in front of the camera. Perfect shot in the camera. And to me, what I believe it is that the doorstop basically just lost some of its moisture that was making it kind of expand throughout the day, and as it was cooling at night, the moisture was leaving the piece of wood that was holding it, and then it just, like Noah said, lost its friction, and the door was heavy enough that it just closed on its own.
Right.
So that's what I think that happened. But it was a cool to finally capture something even that on video, because we never even get natural things that happen that look awesome.
Right. So
unless it's me walking through the camera.
How fast did the door close, though? Did it close like with a slam, or did it close with a really soft shut?
It was not soft, but it didn't slam either. It probably took about 2.5 to 3 seconds.
It had a hydraulic, or maybe not hydraulic, but it had a closing mechanism on it, so that when you went
like a shock,
like a spring-loaded, like a spring-loaded hinge,
right?
It would normally close. That's why you had to have a door stop to keep it. Okay. It wasn't a free flowing door. It was, if you've never been to Edinburgh, it was down in the male wing, as they call the male. It's across from the kids' room, where they have all the toys in it, is where we had the camera mounted up in the doorway there. And there's these double doors, actually. There's two of them that are open this way into the hallway, and those are always kept open. And then one of them, the one on the right side, actually, is the one that closed. And down that hallway goes down to the pool table is. Where supposedly stuff is supposed to happen down there. And we had a shadow detector down there as well, which was acting strangely, but I wasn't sure if that was actually an issue with the batteries in the equipment or not. So it was interesting. I mean, I'm not saying a ghost did that or a paranormal even did it, but it was interesting because you just don't, we've done this for so long, you don't even see anything that's like, ooh, that's exciting.
Yeah. So those shadow detector you're just talking about there, are those ones like a laser grid?
No. This is basically an electronic eye. It's built into the MEL 8704 electromagnetic field meter. They call it the SDD, shadow detector device. And it's essentially just an electronic eye on the device itself. And then we use a camera, a battery to power a camera infrared light that we put across from it. And then if something breaks that beam, so basically if there's an increase in light or a decrease in light, you get an ascending or descending audible tone that happens.
Okay. All right. So I know you don't like the EMF meters or the K2 meters. Okay.
Gravy does.
But
I don't.
But, okay, Gravy. This one's for you.
Okay.
Have you ever had one in an area that should never have an EMF in the area? Have you ever had one actually go off? Like you're like in an open field, you know, there is no lines, nothing running through it. There's nothing overhead, nothing to the sides. Have you ever had one go off?
Well, for starters, we don't investigate open fields, so we're always inside a building. And then also we don't have any, all of our, well, I would say all of our meters, any meters that we have out are data logging.
Okay.
So we don't generally walk around with meters unless something's happening and we need to check that area.
Mm-hmm.
But anything that we have is data logging. And as of today, to my knowledge, none of our data logging meters have spiked abnormally without reason.
Right. I was just kind of wondering, because Joe and I, when we first went to Aztalan, we had an EMF meter with us, and we were on one of the mounds, and obviously there's nothing running through the mounds, and we actually had it was spiking on us. It was starting to go up and down, and then it would spike and stay spiked. And I was working the camera, and I focused the camera on it to get video of it, and that was the day whenever he got back to his house to download it.
The SD card was corrupted.
There was no
brand
video.
Brand new card,
no video. So I was just kind of wondering, you know, if you ever had one go off, if you ever did use one before and had one go off where there shouldn't have been any activity for it to be going off in the first place.
Not to my knowledge of any equipment that we have now that we've had that experience.
Have you ever had any problems like that with SD cards or anything, or hard drives, to where
the batteries drain all of a sudden?
All the time. Unfortunately, it happens way more often than I'd like to admit. Noah, you can plug your ears on this. I did have, we were on our expedition this past summer, and I had a SD card that went bad on me, and basically just replaced the SD card because I was worried my equipment was bad because it was a Zoom H1, and you know, they're not cheap. They're not hard or easy to come by. And we got done with the investigation. I went to play it back, and it wasn't playing back because the card was corrupt.
That's exactly what happened to me.
But I think it was just the age of the card that caused it to be bad, because I mean, I've used it for multiple investigations and nobody else had any of their cards or any of their equipment get corrupt by any means. So,
but that's where the difference is, because mine was brand new.
Yeah, his was brand new.
The SD
right
card
out of the
was brand new because it was
using it.
It was the first time, one of the first times we used those cameras.
But did you test it before you went out? Because I've actually bought SD cards too that either didn't work in the equipment or
that
they failed right away.
Didn't do.
Okay.
Yeah, but didn't you use it after and it still worked fine?
Nope. I had to ditch the card.
I was asking. Oh. Joe.
No, Joe, I did.
Did you actually use it afterwards or no?
No, it's sitting around here with an X on it.
Okay.
A big red X across it.
See, I would have taken it to the store and got my money back for it, or got a new one.
I ordered it off of Amazon. It didn't really cost me that much.
Okay.
Because I got a package deal, you know, of them.
So battery packs in your cameras, you ever have those go dead on you? Just and actually have a full charge battery, like just fresh put in? You know it's full charge, but all of a sudden when you go to use it, it's like dead or down to like one bar left on it.
No, I don't recall any moments of that happening. I mean, we've had to use battery cables because our van dies and we have to go jump it. But that's usually because somebody left the door open.
The door, we were closing it, and light stayed on.
I don't think we've had any major experiences where we've just had like absolute brand new battery drain on us all of a sudden. But not to say it's not possible. There are batteries that have been known to just discharge their energy randomly at times too. So
yeah,
the only experience I had with that is when I've gotten a knockoff battery that is not legitimate for Sony, and then it will say you'll charge the thing for a day and a half, and you'll put it in, and it'll say it's got one bar, and that's just because the battery's of poor quality. Unfortunately, China takes everything knockoff nowadays, and so you have to get almost be a forensic scientist to figure out what is a real battery, what is a fake battery, when you're trying to buy them online.
Oh, yep. I've had it with that. I've had it where the charger was defaulted.
Yep.
Just didn't want to charge the batteries.
Where the charger was faulty and didn't want to do it right.
Oh, I've had that with my Xbox controllers. When they started having those charger decks that you had to set them on.
Another thing I wanted to mention that we were talking about the control recorders is we actually utilize another piece of equipment for those, which are called Faraday cages, which I'm sure you guys are aware of roughly, but we actually generated, Gravy and I came up with a design for being able to hold our Zoom H1 audio recorders inside these Faraday cages. And the reason why I did that is because one of the complaints about electronic voice phenomena is that they're just aberrant radio frequencies that are being recorded by the recorders at random times, depending on, you know, the position of the recorder or the material that it's sitting on or something like that. Something makes it able to be able to be sensitive to those radio frequencies. And so we came up with using a Faraday cage, which can block certain EM fields depending on the size of the holes in the cage, to be able to try and prevent that from happening. And so we actually came up with the design. We built them with, you know, materials we get from Home Depot or Menards. And so every time someone comes in the group, we always have to make one if we haven't have any on hand. Because everyone requires one, because everyone who has a control recorder on their person has to have it inside this Faraday cage. And this Again, trying to think of any way that we can to provide better controls for our investigations that we do, so that if we do capture something during our investigations, we can rule those things out. And we know it works because we took a little like handheld radio, AM/FM radio, and we put it in the inside of the little cage, and then we put the cover on. It loses its radio connectivity, and then we take it off, and you get it back again. You put it on, and it goes away. We actually have a video on our Facebook page that shows it actually working.
Well, that's a good thing to do then. That way, it isolates it, so that way, if you do catch anything, then you've legitimately caught it and not had some sort of weird phenomena happen
Well, otherwise it'd be impossible to prove that it wasn't radio waves, right? Like when you're thinking about, yeah, exactly. Well, someone says, is it radio waves? I'd be like, well, I don't think it is, but I have absolutely no way of proving it. I mean, I can't go back to the night in question and scan all the radio frequencies that were running at the time it was captured.
Well sometimes yeah, that, you can that, also tell
that
if
would
it's
take
radio
you forever.
Yeah, you should be able to tell by the way the phrase is in it too.
Possibly,
because most generally you're not going to get a phrase of "get out" or "help me" or something like that coming over a radio wave.
Yeah, at all.
Those are most infomercials these days.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I agree. But.
Yeah. Well, that's why we do it this way. We don't have to worry about it then. It's inside.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It isolates it, so it makes it easier to figure it out.
So, do you ever go out and investigate any of the cryptids that get talked about?
You know, that's one thing that we don't do. Well, I shouldn't say one thing. The only thing we investigate is hauntings, basically. You know, there's cryptids and UFOs and stuff like that that are out there, but. Really full. We actually have our hands full with the hauntings part of it.
Okay. I was just curious. Yeah.
We kind of run this spectrum and the gauntlet with this, man. We go UFOs, we go cryptids, we go hauntings, we go.
There's just so much out there that's so strange and weird that you know, and to try to find the answers is kind of fun.
Sure.
Yep.
So. When you guys do this, so, and you're going to a location, I'm sure the one thing you do is try to dig up as much history as possible, too, don't you? About the location.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, most definitely.
How far back do you try to go? As far back as possible, or?
Yeah, especially chain of ownership. If it's like a private residence, if it was like a business of some kind. Then yeah, as far back as the records go, till it was built, that we can do. Beyond that, unless there's claims, you probably don't try to see what existed there before that building. You know, if it was a building that burned down and they built another building on a site, then we can get that information. But if it was like a field or whatever, you know, part of somebody else's property that they sold off and that they built a house there, we don't really try to figure out what happened in that field before we, you know, had a house there.
Right.
Because those records are sparse. Those field records.
Sometimes just trying to find some of that information isn't easy either, even with today's technology and the internet. I mean.
Oh, yeah. Newspaper, your microfiche sucks. And, the one thing in Milwaukee that's great, and I don't know if they have this in Madison, they have, what are they called now? City directories. And the city directories, they had them going back to the, you know, last quarter of the 19th century for Milwaukee. And you could look up an address in there, and every year they made one, and it would list who owned it, if they rented it, who was renting it, and then everyone who lived there and what the building was used for. And it was super useful for trying to figure out, like, you know, we get these stories about, oh, this was a bar and Al Capone was here, or this was used to be a brothel or whatever. And so you could actually go back and see what the building was actually listed as in official city documents, and then who actually owned it, you know, get names and ages of even the kids. That live there. A lot of records are only for the property owner. It might be listed as a rental, but only owner's name will be listed. And if you get rental information, it's usually only the male that's who signed the lease. You don't get the family information. So if grandma's living there, you'll never know because they're not on the lease. But,
yeah, but if you go and look at the old phone books that are like at the state historical societies and stuff like that, you can find out Googles of information about who lived at what address.
What's a phone book?
I'm just kidding. Well, it's like some people don't know what a payphone is either.
Wait a minute. You're not a millennial.
You're right. I do know what a phone book is. I've been beaten with it several times.
By me.
Yeah.
They keep giving them to me, so I'm going to find a use for them.
Since you're not a millennial, can you read an analog clock?
I can, yes. Actually, I got two on my wrists. They're the times my sons were born, so.
Yeah. Awesome. He flipped the hour to minute hand, though, but that's right. No one's knows. Thought the hour hand was the long one.
Oh, man. Well, guys.
Wow. Time flies when you're having fun.
Well, we will have some virtual library events that are coming up. Next week on the 22nd, we're going to be doing a virtual library event for the Sussex Public Library. But I believe anyone is absolutely, fine to attend. You do have to register with the library, though, so you have to contact them. We do have an event on our Facebook page for that, so if you're interested in that. And we have another one coming up on the 28th at the Muskego Public Library. But again, these are via Zoom, so... basically our presentation that we give. And if you do attend, I would recommend that you have some headphones, some nice quality headphones with you, because we do play some audio evidence that we've captured over the years as part of those presentations.
And I think we have one at the MSOE library on the 29th. Correct?
That is scheduled, but I haven't heard about that recently, so I'm not sure if it's still happening.
I also did try to find that video I was hoping to share of the door closing. I was going to try to play it for you guys, but I couldn't seem to find it.
I probably have it on my computer, but do I have a way of showing my...
There is a way through this. It just takes a little...
Share screen.
Share screen at the bottom.
I do see it. Let me see if I can quick... grab it if you guys are interested. If not, then
sure. Okay. Yeah, well, that'll give me a minute too, because I want to make the one quick announcement. Next Wednesday, our guest is going to be T. Frulos. We'll have him on at 6 p.m. next Wednesday.
T was actually in our group for about a year, and he wrote a book with mostly about me. I'm just kidding.
Is it a pop-up book with you and your K2 meters?
It's all picture book.
He's on the section of cautionary tale.
Yeah. So yeah, T did a book, Monster Hunters, and he's a fantastic author, and you guys will enjoy having him on the show next week.
Yeah, I was watching it. I watched him at the conference. Well, so I watched pretty much that entire conference.
We've got Pim's website up on the bottom here, your regular website. Is there any other ones like the Facebook or YouTube or anything you want to plug?
Our Facebook page, look for Paranormal Investigators Milwaukee, will come up. I think Paranormal Milwaukee is the tag or Facebook account information for that. And then YouTube channel, again, just search Paranormal Investigators in Milwaukee in YouTube and you'll find us. We have a number of videos up there, and I know Brandon's working hard on a number more that we have shot over the preceding months that he's been working on. Actually, I think the next one that's going to come up is actually a how-to video on how to build your very own Faraday cage that we shot. So you can, we talk about the everything ad nauseum. What it takes, what materials, how big sizes, and we show how to build it, the whole nine yards. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, you want to learn a little bit about the paranormal and go out and do it and be an amateur? I'd check out some of the videos on their site.
Oh, definitely.
It's called Paranormal 101 or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought so.
Our educational ones, and then we also do paranormal reviews, which are basically reviews of some of the locations we've investigated over the over the time, over the years, and trying to give people, you know, an insight without having to spend the money to go to these locations to see if it would be worth it for them to go do. And we give our opinion on what we think of the place at the end to see if we'd go back or not. And then you can always stay tuned through the end credits, because I always have some outtakes on those videos, apparently. And they can be quite entertaining for everybody else but myself. But Brandon, who does the video editing, seems to find some good stuff on there. So definitely check out those videos.
So, you know, just sitting here talking to you for this time that we've been here, it seems like you seem to be the one that is the butt of everybody's jokes.
I am, yes. Yes. I probably have the thickest skin out of everybody in the group. So
you're the comedy relief.
Yeah, you could probably say that. I'm their relief. When they have stress and they want to let go, I'm the one they go to. I am just a punching bag for their verbal abuse. But
he's something, that's for sure.
He sure doesn't let you live down the K2 meters, though.
No, and I don't even know where that came from. I have no interest in K2 meters at all.
You're the only person in the group that owns a K2 meter, Gravy.
Yeah, that's because I bought it for educational purposes and for that doorstop you've always wanted.
When you guys are editing that video, you can just stop it at yeah, at his answer. Yeah. Because that's all you need to know. I don't have one. I just took a 4x4 and cut it into triangles, and that's my doorstops. So I can't find the video.
That's all right. No,
it must have came from Gravy. Must have emailed it. I thought I had it saved, but I can't find where it is right now. So I apologize for that.
Well, we can always have you on another time, and you can be more prepared for that kind of stuff.
Sure,
yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, this was a lot of fun. I would definitely do this again.
And yeah. I do have one more to say that's coming up too. It's a little further off. On the 28th, we have Miranda Young from Ghost Biker Explorations.
Very cool. So,
yeah, that should be fun, she's, too. She's teamed up a couple of times with Soul Sisters out of
Florida.
Florida down there.
But she's out of Tennessee.
Right, she's out of Tennessee. And
all right. Till next time, people. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Take care, everyone.